Well, once again here in northeastern North Carolina and at the first annual Chicken Media Summit, and standing in front of me, or sitting here in front of me, is the president and CEO of Sanderson Farms, Lambkin Butts. And he is graciously opened, the company has graciously opened their doors to the media here. Tell me a little bit about your operation and why it was so important for you guys to share your story with us.
Well, we are members of the National Chicken Council and have been since its beginning. We appreciate very much the work the Chicken Council does for us, particularly in Washington, D.C. And we've been participants in this food media seminar since the very beginning as well. We think it's an important outreach for us to the food writers about our products. This is the first time that NCC has sponsored one where we've taken writers to see a hatchery, a plant, a broiler farm. And when NCC came up with this idea, we were just glad to offer our facility in North Carolina. It is the newest complex, the latest complex built in the industry, so the food media writers get to see state-of-the-art, new equipment, new assets. Our complex is in Kinston, which is 30 miles from New Bern, and New Bern was an excellent spot on the East Coast to host the food writers.
Well, today so far we have toured the hatchery, and we've visited with one of your growers, Brooks Edmondson, and I talked with him as well, and we have seen the feed mill, and we're going to be headed to the processing plant and the wastewater plant. Tell us a little bit about what we saw here today, talking about your from the very start to finish of the operation and what Sanderson Farms provides.
Well, we opened this complex in January of 2011. Which means the feed mill and the broiler farms and the other farms had to be constructed and in operation in 2010. But what we built here was a brand new feed mill, a brand new hatchery, and a processing plant, three different sites. We contracted with over 100 farmers to build broiler houses, breeder houses, and pullet houses. And we began operating all of that January of 11. It took a year to get it to full production. But what we're doing in our plant is packaging products for the retail grocery store. Fresh chicken that are pre-packed, pre-weighed, and delivered to a retail grocery store's distribution center. We generally get to a customer the next day. We'll pack product today. It's in their warehouse tomorrow. Sometimes it's in the store the next day. So it's truly fresh product, and we've sold the production out of this plant into the northeast part of the United States, some in North Carolina, Virginia, but the rest Pennsylvania and up the East Coast.
Talking about the chicken industry as a whole, you know, you've invited the media in here to tell your story. What are some of the misconceptions that maybe the media gets wrong or consumers across the country misconceive when we're talking about the process of poultry production?
Well, we've encouraged the writers to ask us anything. We've welcomed to look at anything and everything we're doing. There's some misconception in the media about animal welfare and how animals in our that we've produced are cared for and handled, and what they go through in that process. So we want to show them exactly what we're doing. Animal welfare is important to us, as it is to the whole industry. There are a lot of questions about antibiotics, and we want to make sure that the writers understand the industry's position on that. We think of our processing plant as a neat, clean food plant. Sometimes in the media, we're portrayed differently than that. So we'll look from front to back at the processing plant and let everybody see how that actually happens. And chickens are processed and cleaned and packaged, and we think it'll be a good experience.
Well, I'm definitely excited to take a firsthand look at the processing plant. Talk about some other struggles. I know corn is your chickens have to eat corn to survive and to grow to meet the demands of the industry. How has the drought and ethanol production affected the chicken and poultry identified?
Well, corn, the two big issues for us really since 08 have been expensive corn and soybean meal. Our feed ration is about two-thirds corn and one-third soybean meal. But the two big issues, high price grain and the economy. And our industry during that time from 08 to now is actually 10% smaller than we were based on cost being high, some bankruptcies, some closings of plants. And our industry, which in 2007 we set 15 million eggs a week, today we're setting 200 million. So we're almost 10% smaller as an industry, which we don't like. We don't want to be shrinking. Sanderson Farms is actually, we're running at 6% less than full production because of those factors. The economy, at least the orders we see from our customers indicate the economy is a little better. Corn is still high, but the economy is a little better. Prices are better, and we will return to full production this summer. Which we're very grateful for. But we're still, the economy is a long way from being over. We just see some small signs of, from returning to normal, but we're seeing some small signs of improvement. And what the story about corn is that 40% of the corn now is used to make ethanol. And with that much of the corn used for ethanol, prices have been high. Farmers have reacted. Last year they planted plenty of acres, and then because of the drought, the yields were low, the crop was low. So corn has been above $8 a bushel delivered to a mill all year, and for most of last year. We actually, in August of last year, we paid over $9 a bushel for corn delivered to our mills. That was the peak. It's still high today. Right now is the planting season, which is just beginning. And again, the farmers have committed to planting 97 million acres of corn, which is plenty if weather and Mother Nature cooperates. If that happens, we'll get some relief later this year on corn prices. But you just never know. You can't predict the weather. All of that farmland is not irrigated, so if we don't get normal rainfall, we'll continue to see high-priced corn. Corn and soybean meal together represent almost 40% of our cost. So it's huge. I mean, it gets passed on to the consumer, but it happens over a period of time. You can't just pass it on the next day. It has to happen with supply and demand. But it will be passed along at some point.
Yes, I don't feel like the consumers or the general population has felt the aftermath of the drought and the high corn prices quite yet, have they?
I think they're beginning to. The Georgia Dock, which is a quoted market that the industry uses to price chicken products to the grocery stores, is today almost $1.03 a pound. It's the highest it's ever been. And so retailers are struggling with that now. They're going to have to pass that on to their customers. It could be in the everyday price or either the feature prices would be higher or both. But the consumers are going to see it. They're already seeing it on beef and pork. And we struggle with the ethanol thing, not because we mind competing for that. With them for corn, we understand competition. But the government has subsidized them so heavily, it's time for the government to get out of that and let that stand on its own like we do. The government has backed away from the import tariff, and they've discontinued the blender's tax credit, which that really went to the refinery, not the ethanol people. But there's still a renewable fuel standard that requires them to use a certain amount. And that, because there's no other substitute, at least today, there's not enough volume of switchgrass or sugar cane which could be used. Corn is readily available, so that's going to continue as long as the renewable fuel standards were pulled, then the refineries would use ethanol when it priced into their matrix, and otherwise they wouldn't. So it would have be more of a supply and demand. And that's what we're, that's our position in Washington is, don't put us at a disadvantage. Let us play on an even playing field and we'll be all right.
Very understandable. Last night you we heard from some speakers talking about the importance of animal source protein, and chicken is a huge part of that. They said, you know, by 2050 we'll have 9 billion people and we'll need to be providing 70% more food, and 70% of that will be need to be coming from efficiency technologies. So looking into the future of Sanderson Farms and the future of the chicken industry, how do you guys feel that you guys can look towards that year 2050 and reach those demands?
Well, our industry has always demonstrated the ability to respond to demand for our product. The industry, there's some limitations to expansion, environmental and otherwise, but I just have complete confidence that our industry will respond. We think a lot of that demand for protein is going to come from exports from other countries, but we're prepared to meet that challenge.
Right. Well, thank you, Lamkin, for taking a few minutes to talk with me, but more importantly, opening your doors to Sanderson Farms for all of us here on this Chicken Media Summit to get a firsthand look, because those of us that have grown up and born and raised in the ag world, we see this every day, we live this every day, but the public, the general public, and the rest of the media really do need to be able to share our story that we try to share on a daily basis. Once again, talking with President and CEO of Sanderson Farms, Lamkin Butts. I'm here at the first annual Chicken Media Summit. I am Jamie Johansson. Johansson.